is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague and mentor, Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. Wolf Warrior, recall from the last years, said to be practiced by PRC diplomats. Wolf Warrior, growl and paw the ground and howl and intimidate. Wolf Warrior. Gregory is here to help us understand that Mr. Trump's style in the first term and practiced here as he waits for a second term is not dissimilar and very effective. The twist here is that our allies apparently have not caught on. So, a lesson in Wolf Warriorhood, Trump style. Gregory, a very good evening to you. The first term in office, 17 to 21, Mr. Trump chose strategic positioning with Wolf Warrior. What does that mean? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, yes, it appears that nobody learned from Mr. Trump's first term in office when he did engage in this Wolf Warrior diplomacy, and as you say, on similar lines to that practiced by the Communist Party of China. You get out there, you make bold statements, you bluster, you threaten, you appear to be insulted, and so on. And you drive the debate in a certain area based on the perception of your aura of self-confidence, so that you start a negotiating position which is already presumably intimidated your opponents. Now, that was one of the aspects of President Trump's Wolf Warrior approach in term one, but he also used it as a form of strategic distraction, because he would often make very loud and shocking claims or demands and the like, to literally capture the media attention while he got on and did something entirely different without the glare of media scrutiny. So this is a lot of what he's done. Yes, he likes to start a negotiating position and see where it goes. But secondly, he does tend to talk loudly about the things in which he is least interested. Canada, Mexico, and others have, and the Australian government for that matter, another ally, and Britain have been horrified by the talk of Trump tariffs coming into effect across all U.S. imports from abroad. Clearly, this is not going to happen. It has started a debate as to how to achieve greater equity for the United States, or greater control of the debate for the United States, but we'll have to see where it goes. And you're right in saying that the Europeans and the Canadians and Mexicans overreacted, as though they didn't understand the art of the deal as written up decades ago by then real estate and other business activist Donald Trump. So, yes, he's doing that, and he's done that with the tariffs. He's done it with the demands to Denmark to sell Greenland to the United States, for the Panamanian government to return the Panama Canal to the United States. And all of these approaches had varying degrees of stimulation to the marketplace. Firstly, the Canadians actually thought it was great that Donald Trump was insulting Pierre Trudeau, and he was doing that with a view to helping the Canadians get rid of Trudeau, who was electorally protected until more or less till the end of his term later this year, and now he is promised to resign. So he did do that, but then Trump went on to antagonize a lot of Canadians by suggesting that it was actually a serious suggestion that Canada should become part of the United States. That's never going to happen. And in fact, what he did was to antagonize Canadians enormously with that remark. And the same with the Panama Canal. I mean, Jimmy Carter legally signed away, foolishly, the Panama Canal to the Panamanian government, and now the canal is under the control, literally, of Chinese management companies. So if a Trump administration wants to get back the Panama Canal, it's not going to be through the bluster. It's going to be through skillful negotiations. And whether that is indeed the intent of President Trump is another matter. It could be that the United States is looking for alternate avenues across the Central American isthmus. And, you know, there are a number of proposals on the table which could be readily taken up, including options through Mexico and the like. So, but that will require something different. The question is, we have to figure out why President Trump was making these bold statements to stir the pot. Clearly, the Europeans have been so weakened by decades of, if you like, foolish sophistry, that they don't know how to react and have reacted as though the end of the world is coming because of President Trump's return to office.
I want to start NATO. I want to start with NATO, Gregory, and see if I understand it with the NATO example. In the first term, there was no war in Ukraine. However, it was Mr. Trump's first visit, I remember, to Europe, to the NATO allies, to say you're not carrying your weight here. You haven't met the obligation for 2.5 or 3% of your budget devoted to defense. You're free riders. There was great objection to that. That was then. This is now. Mr. Trump suggested, I want 5% out of you, or we're not going to carry the weight for you. 5%. A big panic hit. Everybody said, that's impractical. We can't do it. We'll never get there. Even aspirationally won't get there. And yet, if I understand you correctly, that 5% is meant to distract us from something else that's going on that's not transparent, which would be a way of, my guess here, a way of getting the Kremlin's attention. If they go to 5%, they're going to do to us in the 21st century what they did to the Soviets in the 20th. They're going to spend us into surrender. Is that possible, that what he's doing is saying 5% to the Europeans because he's negotiating peace in Ukraine?
Well, I think he's negotiating to suppress literally all of these allied states as well as Russia, bearing in mind that although the common U.S. perception is that the U.S. single-handedly carried the weight and forced the Soviet Union to collapse, that's not really the case. I mean, the reality was that the internal war against the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was reaching profound levels and had been building up for decades. And, of course, that came to a head in 1989-1990 when the nationalists essentially toppled the Soviet government. Yes, the U.S. helped that by bolstering this and that at various times, but so did others. And it wasn't really the strength of NATO at that time, although NATO was at its strongest at that point. NATO today is really a fairly meaningless organization in that it has not achieved the same degree or recovered the same degree of cooperation, efficiency, and sense of purpose that it had in 1989. The fact that the U.S. insists that it has always carried the weight of the defense of the non-Soviet or non-Chinese world is also very questionable. I mean, let's face it, we've had two world wars in which the United States entered with too little, too late. They made a fortune out of the fact that the Allies carried the war effort for years before the United States got involved. To chastise nations like Canada or Britain or Australia is not helpful at this stage. So, but throwing out these things starts a negotiating process. Generally, President Trump then builds up a strong relationship with potential allies in Europe. I think he is genuine in wanting to cower the European Union and to assist states like Hungary, Italy, Poland, Netherlands, and so on, and Sweden and so on, into reasserting their national identities and taking control of the national destinies, which frankly are all aligned with the goals and destinies of a Trump-style government in the United States. So breaking up the European Union would be, I think, very significant. And what we're seeing, the outcry we're seeing against President Trump in Europe today, whether in the NATO context or in the EU context, is from those states which are the drifting left states and not from the strongly European nationalist states like we're seeing arising in France, not with President Macron so much, but with Marine Le Pen and the opposition. We're seeing it in Italy. We're seeing it in Poland, Hungary, Netherlands, and so on. And it will get stronger as we go forward, as we see even the leftist governments, as we see in Germany now under the Social Democrats, they are abandoning the Greens. They're abandoning the failing agenda of liberal immigration policies, the end of nuclear power and fossil fuel energy and so on. All of this is being abandoned, this politically correct stuff, as they get back to business. Look, the SDP is not going to win the next German election. That will definitely go to the Conservatives, either the CDU or the even more conservative AfD, which Elon Musk has been supporting, and I think President Trump supports as well. And that is much more pragmatic and nationalist. As Elon Musk said, this is not an extremist party. This is a party of common sense, where you do the right thing. You don't engage in kumbaya, wishful thinking about climate change and energy and gender politics and the like. You get back and you do what you can to safeguard the unity of the population, the efficiency and wealth of the population, and of course, the safety. So Trump is right to scare them, and they are showing themselves to be fairly stupid to throw their hands up in the air as though this is Armageddon.
I'm speaking to Gregory Coppola, Defense and Foreign Affairs, the editor and publisher. We're talking about the Trump style from Trump 1, and we're on the eve of Trump 2. The Abraham Accords, remember? Well, was that a product of this Wolf Warrior style? There was much noise about moving the embassy to Jerusalem. The world is going to end. About disdaining the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas, who's now in the 21st year of his four-year term, and continues to pay for slay people jailed for murder. He pays off them and their family. And then when we come back, is that where the Abraham Accords came from? Was it misdirection? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.